Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. COVID-19 is showing up at four other local nursing homes, infecting both residents and staff. This is in addition to the Southeast Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, where the coronavirus killed 19 people. What is it about nursing homes that makes the spread of COVID-19 such a concern? And how does this impact the entire community in the pandemic? Now, Governor Greg Abbott is calling out the Texas National Guard to perform deep cleaning at select nursing homes across the state. To find out more about how the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District is responding to the COVID-19 outbreak at nursing homes, I spoke with Dr. Junda Wu, the medical director at SA Metro Health.
Been doing universal testing since May 1st, and the reason is that it helps us get a handle before infection has spread throughout a facility like at Southeast. The definition of an outbreak at a nursing home is one case, so one staffer or one patient. So as soon as we have positive, we go in, and that helps us separate people who are positive from people who are negative, and that's a huge step to containing the infection. A lot of facilities are taking advantage of the availability of River City Care Center to send their positives all off-site, at least until they have, and then bring back. So that really helps prevent transmission, because the other ways of preventing transmission through hand hygiene and PPE use, that's harder. The facilities on that too, but it helps a lot to also be able to remove people who are positive until they're recovered.
Is there a particular concern about nursing homes? We're seeing in the state of Texas that half of the fatalities so far have come from nursing homes.
And that's a number that's reflected nationally. It's a little less in San Antonio so far, but our numbers are small, so I'm not sure how statistically stable that is. Yes, nursing homes are an enclosed space, just like cruise ships or Navy ships or jails. So that's where you have a path of least resistance for a virus to go in like wildfire.
And it can bloom when it's in there.
Yes.
And then the people who work there can cross-contaminate, or at least they could, before a new order was put into place preventing them, a worker, from working in multiple nursing homes?
That's right. That's something that the mayor was proactive about doing in early April. I admit that I still struggle with it a little, because I know that nursing home staff are low paid. Part of the bigger public health picture is going to be better wages and paid sick leave for all of these kinds of frontline workers.
When we have asymptomatic transmission in these long-term care facilities, what does that mean for the general public? A person may think, well, I don't go to nursing homes, this does not impact me.
One thing I want to say about all of the congregate settings, and people think that people at the jail, like, oh, well, that's just what's happening in the jail, or that's just what's happening at a nursing home. There are people who work at the jail. There are people who work in nursing homes who are part of our community, and frankly, people in the jail, because it's a jail, it's not a prison. So, you know, 40, 70 people or more are filling in and out of the jail every day. So these people are part of our community. They're just going to work in a place that's higher risk. So it's a public health good to take care of them especially.
But also, you know, a person who works at a nursing home, they also go to our local grocery stores. We don't realize who we come in contact in a day-to-day basis.
Other grocery stores, they go to their homes, right? at the modes of transmission, the highest is close contact, and a lot of those are household contacts. One thing I've been trying to talk about, and this is slightly off topic, but I don't think enough people realize, if you're in the same household as somebody who has COVID, then you also need to be self-quarantining the whole time that you're in contact with them, and then for 14 days after they are recovered. So unless you have the luxury of having a separate room for them, and you know, a real luxury would be a separate bathroom for them, if you're continuously exposed to somebody who has COVID, then you must start your 14-day clock once they're recovered.
There is still a high number of outstanding tests, I believe, for people who have been checked for coronavirus, who work in other healthcare facilities here in San Antonio, other nursing homes, and we're still waiting those results. So we could be getting more news that other nursing homes are testing positive.
The wait is a huge problem, and thinking about workarounds, because you can't separate your positives from your negatives when you don't have results. And while normally in our community now, we're getting back results in 2-3 days. It's been a long, agonizing wait for the staff and for the patients and family members of the patients at these nursing homes. 8 days and to just get the first set of results for some nursing homes, and those are not complete. So I'm not aware of any nursing homes on our list right now that have complete results.
And do we still have rules in place that prohibit visitors from visiting nursing homes?
Yes.
Is that for all nursing homes, or just the ones that have tested positive?
No, that's all nursing homes. No visits, no group activities. These are HHSC guidelines or rules, and they have not loosened yet. I think that having universal testing will be a step on the way to being able to loosen up, just like in our society at large, having widespread testing is a prerequisite for reopening.
All right, Dr. Wu, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Junda Wu is the medical director at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. When we come back from the break, we continue exploring how nursing homes are being impacted by COVID-19 and what can be done to protect the residents, the workers, and the surrounding community. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The largest numbers of COVID-19 related deaths are occurring in nursing homes and assisted living facilities nationwide, according to a new report by the Centers for Disease Control. In Texas, as of May 10th, 514 out of 1,094 deaths occurred in nursing homes or assisted living facilities where residents aged 65 and older live. Or that's 47% of the state's total deaths from the coronavirus. So nursing homes, assisted living facilities have become the front line in dealing with this pandemic. What questions do you have? What comments do you have? What have you seen? What concerns do you have about nursing homes, the care being delivered there now? What's happening to the staff? What's happening to the residents? What's happening to the surrounding community? Our phone lines are open. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-877-8255, or 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined now by Patty Dukaya. She is a long-term care ombudsman at the Texas Health and Human Services. Patty, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Also with us, Kevin Warren, President and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association. Kevin, good to have you today.
Dave, thanks for having me.
And Amanda Fredrickson is the Director of Advocacy for AARP Texas. And Amanda, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, David. Appreciate that.
So, Patty Dukaya, if you could tell us from the viewpoint of the Texas Health and Human Services, What are the concerns about nursing homes presently with the coronavirus?
Sure. So just to let the audience know that the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program advocates for people who live in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And though my office is housed at the Health and Human Services Commission, it acts independently and speaks independently of HHSC. And so I can speak to the representation of residents and their interests, but won't be speaking directly on behalf of HHSC. One of the things I want to point out first and foremost is that residents are experiencing this like everyone else in our communities and are particularly isolated from family members, and that has been a great concern that we've all had to make sacrifices right now during COVID-19 to shut down visitation by outsiders. And I do think that is on the minds of residents and family members first and foremost. So that's a great concern to us, but something that I think family members and advocates like the Ombudsman understand is necessary temporarily to protect them.
Temporarily? How temporary?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for it yet. None of us on this call know yet how long COVID-19 will affect these visits. But I think everyone agrees that it is painful to be separated from family, and some family members visit daily and help feed and give lots of support to their family member at the facility. So they're all very anxious to be back. And that's particularly so if they have a relative in a facility that has dementia and is really struggling to understand why there are restrictions placed on them.
Nursing homes provide full-time living facilities for residents who need 24/7 on-site medical supervision, and as opposed to residential care facilities who provide individuals not needing 24/7 medical supervision. Residents in nursing homes typically have at least one chronic condition for which they need some ongoing medical care and have reported or sustained some sort of injury that needs a lot of intensive care. So that's to kind of clarify, you know, when we talk about a nursing home, what that is. And this is a high care facility with individuals who are highly trained, who are trying to cope with, just in and of itself, before there was coronavirus, a very trying conditions. Kevin Warren, president and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association. Even before we're in this crisis, we saw that nursing homes in Texas, many of them were going out of business.
Yeah, when you look at where we are, as you said, I mean, we're in an unprecedented time right now, and we're in a fight that's going to take an all hands on deck approach. And nursing homes in Texas were already facing significant struggles, whether it be related to staffing, whether it be related to significant issues with underfunding and reimbursement. So then when you combine those issues and then overlay it with COVID and the devastating effect that we've seen that COVID has on this population, it's only exacerbated the challenges. And that's where, as we've seen and as we've been progressing over the last couple of months, and as additional guidance comes out, and now we've seen the executive order from Governor Abbott on prioritizing testing and prioritizing PPE. These are all positive steps that have to happen, given that we have to remember and recognize just how important this population of Texans is to so many people across our state.
Amanda Fredrickson, Director in Advocacy for AARP Texas. We've heard some callous comments from some individuals who say that this population doesn't really need to be that protected, that when they die of COVID-19, that they weren't going to be with us much longer anyway, so they're not that concerned.
Well, I think we need to keep in mind that these are people's mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles and grandparents, and these are, in some cases, these are people's children. And they deserve to be treated with the same respect that we would want for any of our loved ones. So I think the fact that they're being hit especially hard by this virus just identifies the priority that these facilities deserve. I think they've been neglected for some time, and I think this virus has really shined a light on some much needed attention.
So, as with the director of advocacy for AARP Texas, who are you advocating for? Who do you see as individuals that really need a voice right now?
Well, AARP represents our membership is 50 plus. We have about 2.3 million members in Texas. And obviously that includes a whole host of folks who are residents of facilities, but also their caregivers and family members. And if we kind of go back to the point Patty was making about the fact that we don't have visitors going into the facilities at this time, we don't have the long-term care ombudsman going into facilities at this time, the federal and state government have really dialed back inspections at this point so that they're focused primarily on infection control. Now more than ever, residents really need folks on the outside advocating on their behalf.
And Amanda, I've heard it described as many of these facilities are in lockdown right now, that a lot of the group activities that the residents enjoy throughout the day, break up the day, give them something to do, those things have been canceled. They're not allowed to leave their rooms. Is that what's happening?
That's what's happening, and that's being done really to keep folks safe and to prevent the spread. You know, even with the lockdown, this continues to be the hardest hit population in the state. And, you know, I think probably Patty, Kevin, and I all agree that, you know, this is an area that needs a lot of focus. And the governor's call to do testing across all facilities for staff and residents is very much needed and very much appreciated, because the residents may be in lockdown, but the staff are coming and going. And, you know, I listened to your guest a little bit before this conversation started, and, you know, these folks are coming out into the community, they're going home, they're interacting with their family members and their loved ones, they're going to the grocery store, they're doing what they need to keep their lives going, and then they go back into the facility. And I think we know now that just testing someone's temperature isn't enough to know whether or not that person is actually infected with the virus and able to infect this very vulnerable population.
So we're going to go to the phones. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you have family members who are in a nursing home right now? Are you concerned? What have you seen? Do you work in a nursing home facility, assisted living facility? What have you seen? What do you want us to know about what is happening in these critical facilities right now during this coronavirus pandemic? Let's go to Nora. Nora, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. My mom and dad are in a nursing home in Austin, Texas. Is there one place or a website where I could find out which nursing homes have at least one COVID-19 case?
All right, Nora, thank you for that call. Patty Dukaya, can you tell us what kind of public information is available about this?
Yes, there is not a location where you can identify facilities by name that have a positive case at this time. The federal government is collecting that information now from nursing facilities. Facilities are now required to report through a CDC kind of portal. And it's my understanding by the end of May that the federal agency, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, will be releasing in some form information at the facility level so that Nora and others can know that information. That's all I know at this time about publicly available information to come.
Kevin Warren, President and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association. Here in San Antonio, our mayor issued a declaration saying that you can't work at multiple healthcare facilities, nursing homes simultaneously. They thought that was a way to transfer the virus and cross-contaminate. Is that something that is a rule that's being adopted statewide? And do you have a concern, or you think that's a good idea?
No, it's not a rule that's been adopted statewide. We have seen it in multiple counties and jurisdictions across the state. At the same time, we know that there are providers and facilities across the state that have made the decision independently to not allow their staff to work in other buildings, particularly in circumstances where if it's been identified through, you know, through local reports that COVID does exist in a building. And so as a result of that, the staff in those facilities and in those communities, and just like in San Antonio, it does put a strain on, it's a balance because it puts a strain on the staffing availability that was already very limited and affected going into it. But at the same time, when you look at it from the public health perspective and from the perspective of the health of not only the residents in those communities, but also, the staff that are in those buildings, it's a significant step that we know that a lot of counties and, like I said, a lot of providers have taken.
Here's another caller. Let's go to Bri. Bri, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering about the possibility for more implementation of virtual visitation in San Antonio nursing homes. I know that this is happening in other places in the country, and the social isolation problem is a huge health risk for residents of nursing homes. Is there anything that we can do in San Antonio to sort of ameliorate in other ways the lockdown by, say, like the use of tablets and FaceTime? And are there any efforts in San Antonio that I could maybe join in on to help with that?
Now, a great idea, Brian. I don't know about San Antonio. Maybe someone can call in if they have an idea about that. But let me turn to Amanda Fredrickson. She is with give us a state view about how important this is with AARP Texas.
Sure. Thank you for that, Dave. This is something AARP has been pushing since very early on in the process because we know that regular interaction is so very important for those nursing home residents. And it was a big fear that everyone had when there was talk of a lockdown. The state has encouraged facilities to be really creative in trying to get folks to use tablets, computers, schedule time so that people can have FaceTime visits. We're hearing from our members who have loved ones in facilities that it's a bit of a mixed bag, and that some facilities are better at it than others. Folks have been doing window visits, if you can do that, if your loved one's on a first floor. Those kind of things can be arranged where you can kind of talk on the phone and still see each other. But again, it really depends on the facility and their resources. But we would really encourage folks who have someone in a facility to really pursue that facility to offer, if you have the ability to do FaceTime or any other means of doing a visual chat, to really try and make that connection. It's really important.
I wonder about the sharing of those tablets and things like that. I'm sure they'll be wiped down and made not become a mode to transfer the virus. But also, what about the technology? I mean, are there people who can help people who aren't familiar with the technology be able to use it, Amanda?
Absolutely. We're hearing that staff are helping folks where that technology is available in the facility, that they're helping folks to hook up so that they can have a conversation with their loved one. Not always sure that those conversations are maybe as private as they might have been in the past, because the folks in the facilities may need help with the technology, but we are hearing that where it's available, the staff are really helping out. But again, it's just really uneven.
All right, so we're taking a break. We'll be right back. We're going to continue our conversation talking about how nursing homes are the front line right now in dealing with the COVID-19 crisis, what's being done in terms of public information, letting you know which nursing homes have an outbreak and how to respond to that. The number is 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this.
Evidence of an all-African-American combat unit in World War I was unearthed in the fields of France.
But this unit wasn't just any black unit. It was the underground command post of a unit called the Black Devils. That was the name the Germans gave them because of their fierceness in combat.
the Black Devils, had ties to a pandemic. Their story on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about nursing homes and COVID-19. We're now joined by Viana Davila, a reporter for ProPublica Texas Tribune, their investigative unit. And Viana, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks for having me, David.
So you are looking to find out which nursing homes have tested positive for COVID-19 cases, and what are you finding?
You know, your previous guest really wonderfully articulated the fact that it is very difficult to know exactly where these deaths are. You know, some cities have been better about publicizing when there has been an outbreak, though. As Dr. Wu from San Antonio told me, an outbreak really could even be one case. So it's been very difficult to know, as all of your guests have said, where these outbreaks have happened. A lot of it depends on the media, or an outbreak has to be so large that it requires some kind of news release. You know, our story came out a couple of weeks ago, so this is a little bit old, but we found at the time that nursing homes and assisted living facilities made up, I think, about 40%. Of the COVID-19 cases in the state. So I think that just gives you a sense of how big this number is.
Now it's up to 47% presently. So are they telling you that they can't tell you because of HIPAA or privacy rules? What's the reason?
Right. They're basically, I mean, it's almost like citing HIPAA, but also the state privacy law, which is actually far more stringent than HIPAA. Which, you know, they're saying, HHAC is saying, bars the release of any protected health information under the Texas Public Information Act. So, you know, that could be identifying a person by name, which, of course, we understand, but also the address of where they live. And the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas has really pushed back. We talked about that at the end of our story, against the state's interpretation of that state law. It's been in place for many years, basically saying you are using this and interpreting it in an incorrect way. We're not asking for the information that would necessarily personally identify people. This is a public health crisis, and we need to know.
How do we use that information? Okay, you're able to come up with a list of, if you get what you want, the nursing homes in Texas that have tested positive for COVID-19. How useful is that information to the public? How
useful in terms of...
What do people draw from that? It's like, okay, this one, this one, this one, and there's a lot of them. And then you go, okay, now what?
I mean, I think let's start from the most granular form, right? So the families of these people, I mean, we talk to families who, you know, that's not the general public. They knew people were dying or were sick, and they couldn't get information for a while. We talked to folks from the Waterford and College Station, right? And it took them weeks to find out what was happening. The same was true in Brenham in Washington County. So on the base level, you can argue this is important to those folks, right? Because it's their personal relatives. But on the larger level, I think this pandemic, there's so much that we don't know. And I think knowing where these outbreaks happen helps us understand, I mean, just have government transparency, right? Helps us better understand and trace how the disease is flowing. I think protects us all in knowing the scope of where the disease is operating. Going back to Brenham in Washington County, at least 2 weeks ago, at the time, nursing homes accounted for more than half of that county's cases. If I don't know that, I look at that county and I think, my God, that is a huge number for a relatively small, you know, rural county. So I think more information is critical. We've seen that again and again in this process, in this crisis.
So the accusation that some have made is that the system of protecting this information, hiding this information from the public, is to protect the nursing homes, their bottom line, over the public's right to know. I mean, is that what's happening?
I'm not going to say if this is about bottom line or not. You know, a lot of those companies are citing
the state law and saying this is about protection. I think we know that lawsuits are going to come out of this. Some already have. And so you can draw your own conclusions from that.
The governor has sent out the National Guard to clean certain nursing homes. Are you, I guess those are ones they probably have COVID if the governor sent the National Guard to give them a deep clean, right?
I'm assuming you could draw that conclusion. And in some cases, we know that is the case. In Brenham, there was sort of a strike team sent from the state after that outbreak became public. But I think it raises an interesting question that your guests have already talked about, which is the flip side of this. If families right now and visitors can't go into these facilities, sort of the presence of whether it's National Guard or any of these other people, their loved ones are very isolated and disconnected. So that's a difficult part of this. You know, what is it like if I'm a person living in a home and I see folks in military gear coming in? I don't know if that's a concrete conclusion. I'm just saying that just sort of paints a picture for you of the difficulty families and residents of these places are facing.
And really quickly, because we're running out of time here, but you sure. talked about lawsuits. There is discussion that nursing homes want legal immunity from lawsuits from COVID-19 cases. Are you tracking that?
You know, right now we're trying to keep an eye on all of this. I'm not surprised that you're going to see that. And look, they're in a difficult position too, right? They are an essential service. They have to keep operating. This is a tough time, but I think we just have to keep following to make sure that this information could, you know, is made public. The governor, as you said earlier, does require testing. But even though there have been calls from editorial boards, Houston Chronicle calls for this, Freedom of Information Foundation, they're still not releasing where these cases are happening in nursing homes.
Deanna Davila, reporter for the ProPublica Texas Tribune Investigative Unit. Thanks for talking to us. All right, let me go pivot now over to Kevin Warren, president and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association. Where are you on the release of this information? Do you think the public needs to know this, or is this something that should be held a little more tight to the vest by these nursing homes?
No, we're supportive of the transparency issue, but let me clarify a couple of things that your previous person referenced. And I'll tell you, Dave, unfortunately, we hear this often, is that there are, we hear the individual circumstances, and I would call them unfortunate circumstances, where families, assuming responsible parties, have not been notified or communicated with. And we tend to see this broad brush response and saying, well, that no one's being communicated with. And as it stands right now, facilities and providers are required and have been required that if there is a incidence of COVID in a building, whether it be from staff or resident, that they are required to communicate with family. They're required to communicate with all the staff. They're required to communicate with the state agencies of jurisdiction. And that is where the facility's primary focus is ensuring that everybody that's involved in that building is aware so that the necessary protocols and steps can be taken. Because at the same time, the other untold story there is no doubt about it. This is extremely difficult for the families that can't interact with their loved ones like they used to, that they can't touch them, they can't hug them. That's absolutely the case, and it is a challenge that the staff that are in these buildings are working diligently to help overcome, because they are and have become extended family because family can't be there. The rest of that story, though, Dave, is that there is also a significant impact on the staff that are working in these facilities, that the staff are also being isolated from their own families. Staff are going and staying in hotels because they can't go home, or been asked not to go home and just stay at a hotel to make sure that they are doing everything possible to prevent any concerns that may come up. Staff are working extended hours, and that's why it's so important, and that's why I started my original comments by saying that it's going to take a collaborative and global approach, because and to pivot back to one other point, although survey and certification is currently not doing a lot of regulatory visits in terms of annual surveys, I will share with you that surveyors are in buildings very, very frequently right now. You also have, because of other actions that have been taken, you've got actions through the emergency management, through the Department of Emergency Management, sending in teams and doing evaluations and assessments. And so there is this hands-on approach, and it's got to stay that way for the benefit of both the residents and the staff so that we can get through this collectively and we can get through this as quickly as we can.
Patty Dukaya, long-term care ombudsman for the Texas Health and Human Services. Do you know about the, can you tell us anything more about the National Guard, Texas National Guard, doing these sterilization deep cleanings at certain nursing homes?
I'm so sorry, I cannot. I don't have more information about that process and how it will be conducted yet. It's very new information to me as well.
But how... I wonder, like, what kind of cleaning they're going to be doing that's so thorough and deep that how it will make a difference when we know if you have patients who are carriers.
So they have used National Guard for this purpose in other states. So I am aware that's occurred in some other states. And I think because Kevin is describing the very real fact that staff are stretched to the limits there providing direct care for residents, and that this could be kind of a staffing support measure, perhaps at the facilities with an outbreak, to ensure a deep clean. I think it's a really good step, and it makes sense to me that it takes some of that deep clean burden off of the staffing demands on particular facilities that are already, you know, really need to focus on their own personal infection control and focusing on the individual residents and caring for them.
All right, we're taking another break. Our phone lines are open. You can call in if you have a question, a comment, you want to tell us about something that's happening to one of your loved ones that is in a nursing home. If you work in a nursing home, tell us what's happening with you, what the expectations are. And if you think they're out of whack with reality, give us a check. Give us a reality check. 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about nursing homes and COVID-19. Amanda Fredrickson, Director of Advocacy for AARP Texas. There is talk in Congress about providing nursing homes blanket immunity when it comes to dealing with lawsuits and COVID-19. Where are you on that?
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that most of the inspections have stopped. We don't have in-person visits. We don't have the long-term care ombudsman in the facility. So while there may be surveyors in facilities where there's an outbreak, they're not everywhere. And I think when families think about litigation, it's certainly the option of last resort. But we also think that nursing homes that are negligent need to be held accountable.
And Kevin Warren, President and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association, are you concerned of an avalanche of lawsuits against nursing homes in Texas following up from COVID-19?
I think you have to expect it. I mean, I think you look at even though there doesn't seem to be a community across the country, if you will, that's, and I say, you know, whether it's in long-term care or elsewhere, that's immune from the effect and the impact of this virus. I think you have to expect it. And so, you know, the ask in the discussion at this point is about limited liability protection. And recognizing that's looked at no different than what Congress is also looking at, and discussions here locally have been about looking at it even as businesses open up. Is it, what are their liability concerns that everybody has? This is not just a nursing home. A nursing home discussion.
New York State gave their nursing homes a liability from those lawsuits. Would you like to see that in Texas? Kevin?
Yes. I mean, we'd like to see limited liability protections for nursing homes and all healthcare providers in Texas as they're trying to battle a disease that is dealing as it has been.
We have an email from Valerie. I'm very concerned about folks in long-term care and assisted living facilities. My concern is in regards to the upcoming hurricane season, which is expected to be more extreme this year. I think back to the horrors of Katrina evacuees that were sent to San Antonio after their facilities were destroyed. I also think of evacuees that lost their lives in traffic jams when attempted to flee the hurricane. I also recall the stories of residents abandoned in their Florida facilities. The Gulf Coast states are opening up even while they are seeing spikes in COVID-19 cases. What's being done to prepare for emergency weather events? What's going to happen to the COVID-19 positive residents if they need to be evacuated? These residents are often medically fragile. Are there any plans being developed? Patty Dukaya, can you tell us about that? You're the ombudsman from the Texas Health and Human Services.
Yes, so this is on our minds too as advocates for nursing home and assisted living residents. We have communicated with long-term care regulatory about the same issues that I heard your Valerie write to you about. She seems well informed and we share those concerns. There are efforts being made, especially around the Gulf Coast region, to prepare for and consider the hurricane season under these circumstances of COVID-19. I think we have, with each major hurricane in these last couple of decades, we have learned a tremendous amount. We also have exposed some problems in various nursing facilities, and with that, we learn new things. We are at the Ombudsman Program. We're entering into that conversation about hurricane season with our facilities. Right now, I would say they seem and feel too overwhelmed to really think through that in a concrete way with us. And we're going to have to get past that because it's May 14th. And we need to be thinking ahead and they need to be thinking ahead about this. And there's just so much on their plate right now in this crisis. So I share the concerns. This is on the minds of regulatory services. We've talked with regulatory services, especially in that region, about how to prepare for this. And all facilities are going to need to think about how COVID-19 will affect their evacuation decisions. Ultimately, we've had good outcomes when facilities make the decision early to when they evacuate and get out of the immediate zone. They can get ahead of those problems that were encountered with traffic and
But that becomes so difficult because we're dealing with a fragile community. Moving them and exposes them to a lot of risk, and we don't really know exactly where the hurricane's going to go. 2 days out, it's still a big guessing game. It could 200-mile area on the Gulf Coast. It could go anywhere, and so it's like it's a roll of the dice, and it's really a no-win situation. Amanda Fredrickson with the AARP Texas. PPE and its availability has been a big question for a long time since the start of this COVID-19 crisis. Has that impacted the quality of care?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that if facilities are having trouble getting access to PPE, that's going to affect the quality of care because it affects both the staff and the resident. It's hard for a staff person to feel safe caring for someone in this kind of a virus situation if they don't feel protected. And similarly, if the resident isn't being properly protected, that's an issue. We've been tracking some of the things that local areas within the state and other states have been doing to be more aggressive. And I think the state of Maryland on the PPE front is getting a lot of positive attention because their governor stepped out quite early on and directed the facilities to go well beyond the existing CDC requirements, which in CDC requirements basically say if you're caring for someone that is presumed COVID negative, you do a mask and gloves. If someone's COVID positive, it's full PPE. And as we understand it, his rationale was that basically we know people are asymptomatic in caring for these folks, and so they should in fact be using full PPE all the time. And we think that was a pretty aggressive approach, but probably a pretty smart one.
Kevin Warren, President, CEO, Texas Healthcare Association. The as we said earlier, the nursing homes were generally in Texas, a lot of them, they needed help before all of this. When we get out of this crisis, do you think we're going to be finally the legislature will do something to step in and provide greater reimbursement and support for nurse long-term care facilities in Texas?
You know, Dave, I sure hope so. In fact, I had somebody ask me, coincidentally, I had the question asked of me the other day, that with all of the challenges and the difficulties, do I think, is there a silver lining, if you will? And my hope, and the silver lining that I hope is recognized, is that we have got to really take a good hard look at how much support, whether it's, you know, financially, in terms of staffing support, in terms of initiative, that we are giving to this, to the long-term care profession in Texas, and are we doing enough for them as a state, and are we prioritizing them enough? I mean, you know, like you mentioned, the funding. I mean, the funding has been a significant issue in Texas for many, many, many years, and it's an issue that still remains today. The facilities are still, there was a request for, submitted from Health and Human Services Commission that went into the Legislative Budget Board in mid-April. That included requested additional temporary funding for not only long-term care, but others that are other healthcare areas that are managing the COVID crisis. And we're still, and we are collectively still waiting on a result of that. And all the while, to Amanda's point and others that have been made, the utilization of PPE continues to increase as guidance goes up. I mean, you know, we're seeing that on in a typical day, you could use up to 90,000 masks. In the state of Texas on a daily basis, given that we've got 1,200 facilities. So it becomes a mask problem in terms of getting additional PPE and getting additional masks back into the building. But now that we've got the numbers that we're seeing with COVID, and actually COVID in the building, those numbers of 90,000 only increase, and they have increased. As we do statewide testing, we have to expect, as we've seen in other states, and we have to be prepared for a higher number of cases in the facilities that I've identified. All of that is going to not only require an increase in the number of PPE utilization, but we're also concerned about what that does when we see incidents of, or higher incidents of positive tests on staff, knowing that the staffing challenges we're facing. And so we're going to that's another issue that we're going to have to look at long term, and really currently is, do we have and are we working collectively to develop a statewide staffing strategy we continue to move forward with testing?
All right, I'm going to get the last word in to Patty Ducaya with the Texas Health and Human Services Ombudsman. If a family member finds out my loved one is in a facility where they've tested positive, what should I feel? How should I react? You have about 40 seconds.
Well, be reassured that you were informed properly by the facility of this, and look to the facility to provide you ongoing communication. Turn to your ombudsman for information about what are the best practices and education about what the state is requiring each facility to do in those circumstances. And there are multiple services here to help and support you, and one of those for families is the ombudsman program.
All right, I want to thank you, Patty Ducaya. She's the long-term care ombudsman for the Texas Health and Human Services. Also with us, Kevin Warren, president and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association. Amanda Fredrickson is the director of advocacy for AARP Texas. And we heard earlier from Viana Davila, reporter with the ProPublica Texas Investigative Unit. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.